I think you mentioned a breadth of topics that have a lot of impact. And I also, again, citing back to the podcast with Dr. Tambe, I wanted to learn more about, like, how do you decide which products do you work on? As in, so I know there is a variety of applications, variety of problems that can be solved, because the problems are endless. But in terms of AI applications, we can either solve all of them or maybe none of them. So how do you decide, like, which projects interests you versus which is possible versus that aligns with Google research interest versus you have people who can actually make a difference working on those projects? So how do you manage these multiple entry points and try to finalize a project that you might be working on for the next few years?
No, that's actually an excellent question. And I think it's a very important one, because what I feel, again, having been also a graduate student and as I joined kind of industry in my early years, I mean, I can relate to what often goes on in the mind of a young researcher. I mean, I remember when I graduated with a PhD, I mean, I was very excited about that particular area and I wanted to solve further problems right in that area. And that's a very natural thing, because, and often this is how we as researchers choose problems. We have certain area of expertise, and often our research interests are aligned with that expertise. And sometimes what we do is we say, oh, we look at the available literature and we say, okay, existing state of the art is able to solve this problem. Let me pick a problem which is not adequately addressed, right, by the existing state of the art, which I believe I can solve, right? And therefore, I will be able to write a paper, right? I will be able to claim, here's my advance, right, over the previous state of the art, and I'll be able to write a paper, everybody will be happy. So often, kind of, we have a tendency, right, to choose problems on that basis. What's that delta, right, to the existing state of the art, which I'm interested in, which I'm reasonably confident I can solve. And I would say it is fine to be in that mode sometimes, but if that is your dominant mode, you're really missing out on something much bigger. Because in my view, the right way to pick problems is to answer a series of so what questions, right? You say, okay, let's say, I say I want to solve this problem. So you should be asking me, so what? I mean, what would happen? I mean, if you were to solve that problem, then I give a response. And I think then you should ask another so what question. Okay, I mean, yeah, I mean, I say, let's say I say, oh, I'll build multilingual models. So what? I mean, what will happen? Oh, this way, I mean, that farmer's son that I was talking about, that laborer's daughter, she would also be able to, in some sense, access information in her native language. You ask another, so what? And then I give another response based on that, saying, look, this is going to now make so much of a difference, right? It could improve whatever this girl's learning ability. She could now become much more successful in her career. And so after a series of these so what questions, if you end up with answers that suggest that the impact is going to be significant, in my view, that's a problem worth solving. Because if after a series of so what, you end up with something which, yes, I mean, maybe improves things a little bit by a small degree for a small set of people and so on, perhaps the problem is not worth going after, right? I'm not making a judgment call, it's not worth solving. But, I mean, with your limited time, with your finite amount of time that you have, right, perhaps in your lifetime and so on, perhaps you should be focused on bigger problems. So now a problem with some of these bigger problems is you realize, look, I don't have the skills, right? I don't have the ability to solve that bigger problem by myself. So, A, it puts you now, in some sense, it takes you out of your comfort zone. When you pick these larger problems. And one of the things that you have to do is not just solve the problem, try to solve the problem alone. You have to now team up with other people, and often team up with people who have complementary expertise to what you have. Because sometimes also we have this very tendency, right, that, oh, I work on natural language processing or I work on computer vision, let me work with other researchers also in computer vision. And yes, we kind of advance, right, this state of the art. And also that is how we often structure even teams, right? I mean, we have people with computer vision expertise all working together and so on. I think every once in a while, you should also be looking at, okay, here's this big problem that I want to solve, which is going to require expertise, not just in computer vision, it will require natural language processing, it will require HCI expertise, it will require some social science kind of a background, maybe some economics, ideas from economics, and maybe, likewise, when I'm looking at the world of healthcare, maybe it requires some medical kind of domain expertise and so on. So when you're solving these bigger problems, A, you really need to start to bring together, right, and start collaborating with people who bring complementary expertise to you, to what you have. And I would say it's often, right, in your career, you should be working on such more ambitious problems because of two reasons, right? One is that your rate of learning is much higher when you work on these challenging problems outside your immediate comfort zone, because you're learning so many new things, often right from your teammates who bring that complementary expertise. So even if you fail at that project, right, in that project, at solving that problem, you have still learned a lot, right? So even if you fail, often it is worth it to work on those challenging problems because you are learning so much. And many of these failures, right, are paving the way for bigger success down the road. And the other aspect is that if you succeed even once or twice, the recognition that you get from the community, which is what often researchers crave for, but more importantly, ultimately, it's also the sense of self-satisfaction. Your own sense of self-satisfaction is going to be much higher when you come up with good solutions to a meaningful problem than when you only do some incremental work and yes, you've got that paper published and when you look back upon your career and you say, oh, I've written all these 100 papers, if those are all incremental papers, I can assure you, you're not going to get that same sense of satisfaction as you would get even if you have solved, let's say, two problems, even if you have solved one problem that really made a big difference, right, to the world, you're going to feel much greater sense of satisfaction. And of course, I would also say, I encourage the young researchers to take a longer term view. Now, honestly, we are all also motivated often by the recognition, fame, and so on. I mean, if you look at kind of people getting major awards, right? When people get major awards, let's say like Nobel Prizes and other fields, Turing Award in the area of computing, they get these major awards, right? Usually for one defining accomplishment, right? Or a very small set of major accomplishments, right? Nobody gets a major award, oh, because they've written 500 papers that have 500,000 citations. Nobody gets a major award for just producing a body of work. People get major recognition for making really like outstanding contributions to a few major problems. And I would say even you get a lot more satisfaction out of that, which is why and often that doesn't come naturally to us. The natural tendency often is to work on those incremental kind of problems, which is why I think that this is very, very important and something to be very, very deliberate about when you are pursuing a research career.
I love this perspective, and there's nothing much I can add because I'm still in that very minimalistic short view. But I think from what I understand is like it's important to zoom out a bit and see what kind of impacts we can do. And if the impact is very less, then maybe it's not worth solving, or maybe we can have a lesser bandwidth to that particular project. But it's important to zoom out and see what is the bigger charter that we can address and start working on that? Because it's like, even if you're working on big project, if it doesn't happen to be the best thing, but at least you did something better than the smaller impacts that you have. So I really love that thing. Yeah. This is something I realize can only come from senior people, because we as students, we don't have the breadth of exposure for the entire field, let alone computer vision or AI, which is like rapidly developing. So I think this is very important from for us to hear that, okay, please zoom out and work.
I want to correct you over there. I mean, I shouldn't say use the word correct you, but I mean, I beg to differ, because sometimes I feel younger people are capable of much bigger things than older people like me, and most of the time I would say, see, because when you are a junior researcher and so on, right, one of the strengths you have is you're not burdened by conventional wisdom. Because one of the things that often affects as you kind of get entrenched in a given field, while on one hand you kind of gain that experience, all those insights and so on, one of the things that happens is you get too embedded in the conventional way of thinking about it, right? Because you've been thinking about that problem for years, and you are talking to these other researchers who are also thinking about these problems for years and so on, right? So sometimes it makes your perspective a bit stale. And the power of young researchers is you don't have that problem of being burdened by conventional wisdom. Right. So often, you guys who are young, you have some big advantages over people like me, right, who are more senior, more experienced and so on. Right. So which is why I wanted to challenge you that don't think that you have to have those years of experience and so on. Right. Before you will really be able to accomplish those big things. No, often young researchers achieve breakthroughs that elude experienced people. And in fact, there is that theory, right? There is that, try to remember what was that book, Medici Effect, which had that kind of a claim that most breakthroughs, right, in the history, in our human history, have come from either very young people or people who were new to a field. That they may have been experienced, but they were new to a field. And the reason they were able to come up with those breakthroughs is because they weren't burdened by conventional wisdom. So I don't want to get into the debate. Look, there are plenty of also breakthroughs that have come from very experienced researchers. So I don't want to minimize that. But there is that line of thought, right, which has a certain merit to it. And so don't underestimate your own capability, right, as a young researcher. And so don't be afraid to dream big. And achieve those big things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's a nice way to put it like that. Yeah. I agree.